There's a couple of things that I'm supposed to remind you of at the close, but I have a bad habit of forgetting things. So I'm going to remind you of the beginning, so that way I can pick them back up if I forget at the close. We do have a covenant lunch today. Those of you that attend our covenant lunches, all of you that are signed up, it is on directly after the service. And if you have children, you're supposed to take them to one of the rooms. I can't remember the number, but Brian will tell you what that was. And we have our next covenant luncheon, if you have not signed up for one, coming up on January 15th. There is a sign-up sheet. If you haven't been, come. It's a great way to hear about the church and what we're doing and what this covenant process is all about. You get free lunch for it, so there's a sign-up sheet for that. Also, we have an opportunity to, men, if you're trying to think of something you can get for the ladies in your life and you want to get them a gift certificate so they can attend the women's retreat, we have these gift certificates that'll be back there. You can stop at a table and get a gift certificate, which would be a great thought of a gift if you haven't thought of others or in addition to others. We are selling Christmas trees, as you all are well aware, and I believe we can use some more volunteers today to help with the sale of that Christmas trees. It's been a great opportunity to reach out to the community. And if you haven't bought your tree yet or you know someone that hasn't bought their tree yet, send them on over here because we've still got some trees, I think, left to sell. Okay? Had a wonderful Christmas tea here yesterday, a blessing for the ladies. I heard wonderful things about that. And next week we have a baptism coming up on December the 18th. What a great opportunity to be here at the 10:30. There's 8 or 9 of our church family will be baptized, so I hope you'll be here for that. That's next Sunday at 10:30. And then on Christmas Eve we have our 5:30 service, which is sort of the big one for all the families with kids and everything, and then our 9:30, which is more of the introspective communion service. We'll have both of those. No child care at either one, all right? So we want all our volunteers to be in the service. And then the following day is a Sunday, is Christmas Day. There will be no service on Sunday, December 25th. We want you to be with your families on that day, okay? I think I got it all. All right. And no, that doesn't mean you get out of the sermon now because you had to listen to all that, right? How many of you, each Christmas, have a plan for how you expect everything to go? Anyone here have their plan for Christmas? Anybody? How many of you never have things go perfectly according to your plans? How many, huh? We all have plans and agendas that often get disrupted. And this can be extremely frustrating. This has been a particular challenge for me. It's going to be a real time of honesty here. I've shared with you before how I was an only child. I did not have to share a bedroom with a sibling. And so when I did not want to be bothered, I would just retreat to my room, put up a do not disturb sign, and I could pretty much lock out anything I did not want to deal with. It was one of the greatest adjustments of my life when I went off to college, having to deal with a roommate that sometimes had a different agenda than I did. And I was not just an only child. I was one for whom my parents, particularly my mom, made it her life's work to protect me from outside disturbances. Part of that was just her loving nature. Part of it may have been she had me fairly late in life. She and my dad, after much trying, had concluded she could not bear a child. So they had completed all the paperwork necessary to adopt. In fact, they were next in line for a young baby girl named Debbie when my mom learned she was pregnant. So Debbie became David, and the rest is history. And I tell you all of this simply to say that I grew up fairly well insulated from having my plans and my agenda interfered with in any significant way. Yeah, you could say I was a spoiled brat. Okay, I get it. But the result has been that God has had a lot of work to do to break me of my need to be in control, to teach me how to see people and events that mess with my control, that disrupt or interfere my plans in an entirely different light. Shared last week about how when I trusted in Christ at the age of 23, he immediately transformed some of my behaviors. Things like my foul language, my distorted moral code. But other facets, like the selfishness that led me to not deal well with disruptions to my plans and agenda. Well, that is something God has been working on for the past 39 years. The two most significant steps God has taken in that process. First one was, he would cause me to fall in love with a young lady for whom there is no such thing as a disruption to her plans, my wife Nadita. Because if you know her, she is totally devoted to meeting the needs of others 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if that wasn't enough of a shock to my system, he then decided to create circumstances by which I would take on a profession, that of a pastor, where being disrupted is just part of the job description. And yet, even with all of God's pruning in this area of my life, I still struggle at times when my agenda gets derailed. But you know what? I don't believe that I am really all that unique in this struggle. For so many of us, life is all about our agenda, our priorities. That's what we are focused on. And then God comes along with a disruption, an interruption. We think it's a bad thing. But really, it is just the opposite. Because God often brings interruptions and disruptions to our world as his way of pruning away some of our pride and our selfishness, as his way of molding our character so as to make us more like him, more like Jesus. And how you or I respond when our plans get interfered with is, I think, one of the best ways to determine how much we are growing in our faith and whether or not we are truly becoming more of a disciple of Christ rather than being content to be just the hanger on, right? Hanging around church on the outskirts. Someone whose commitment to Jesus is more about what it can gain you than it is about counting the cost and following him completely. You know, we talk in churches a lot about discipleship. This church, many churches. But I find that very few people become really engaged in the process. See, friends, to be a disciple means not only are you immersed in learning the ways of God's kingdom for yourself, you are also imparting what you are learning to another person. And you cannot do that well if you expect it all to happen at your convenience. This is where we often confuse being in a Bible study with being engaged in a discipleship relationship. See, when you are truly discipling another, you are engaged in their life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Not just once a week when you have a pre-planned meeting. You are open to having your plans and agenda regularly interrupted, if necessary, to meet the needs of the one whom you are discipling. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, anybody familiar with that name? He was a pastor, one of perhaps the few in Nazi Germany who stood up to Hitler and what the Nazis were doing. And for that, he would ultimately go to a concentration camp and be executed for his opposition. He wrote an incredible book called Life Together, in which he talks about how God uses interruptions in our lives to mold us. And he says this about the complaint that we often make when we are interrupted from whatever task it is we are pursuing. The response of, I would like to listen or help or serve that need that was unexpectedly brought to my attention, but I'm just too busy. Bonhoeffer wrote this, one who worries about the loss of time certain outward acts of helping others might entail is usually taking the importance of his own life too seriously. God will constantly cross our path and cancel our plans by sending us people with needs and requests. Therefore, we must allow ourselves to be interrupted by God. Those were hard words for me to swallow. Because, as I told you, quite frankly, I like to be in control. Oh, I was not averse to serving others. so long as I could do it within my carefully planned schedule. But I did not like unplanned, unexpected requests or needs to interrupt my day. I was very task-oriented, so when people interjected themselves when I was on a task, I did not do well with that. And God has been, for the past 39 years, working on breaking me of that. And it all started with a simple question that I had to ask myself. If I really do want to be used by God, can I reasonably expect to do so on my schedule and pursuant to my agenda? Well, I did not have to go too far in the Old Testament to get my answer. Because nowhere in its pages did I find an individual do a great work for God that they were the ones to plan out so that it occurred on their timetable and their schedule. Every great work started with God's interrupting, disrupting that person's carefully planned out agenda. There was Noah. I mean, he's comfortable in his job and his role in the community. And then God interrupts him and says, I want you to build a boat in your driveway, and your efforts are going to result in your undergoing intense ridicule. But it's okay, because you are going to be responsible for a reset of the entire human race. There was Abraham. This guy's almost 100. He has no children, perhaps ready to wind down in retirement with his wife Sarah, when God interrupts his life with a call to leave everything he had known, to travel to a far-off land that he won't even know where it is until he gets there. And then on top of that, at the age of 99, he is going to start a family. Nadita and my fourth child, Allison, was unexpected. I was just about ready to turn 50 when Nadita told me she had just conducted a home pregnancy test. And guess what, sweetheart? I still remember the shock of receiving that news. What do you think went through Abraham's mind when Sarah told him her news? There is Moses, who is finally coming to grips with the low self-esteem he had carried with him from childhood. He is comfortable in his vocation as a shepherd. And then God says to him, I want you to leave it all behind and return to Egypt, where there is a price on your head. And I want you to stand up to the most powerful ruler on earth. And for Moses to criticize the Pharaoh, well, he was likely to respond with much more than just a word from his Twitter account. Pharaoh was, okay? God continually interrupts and disrupts people's lives in the Bible. And it is through those interruptions that he does some of his greatest work. So I had to learn that God was not really interested in my living a comfortable, easy life that ran according to my plans and agenda. And it is important that we understand this, because we live in a world where avoiding being interrupted, avoiding being bothered, is so highly valued that we have developed all sorts of technology to insulate us from being interrupted. The answering machine, in its original format, right, was created primarily so we would not miss phone calls that occurred while we were out of the house, right? Yet for most people I know, they now use their answering systems primarily as a way to avoid picking up the phone and being interrupted by someone they don't want to talk to. But Pastor David, I need to do that because I'm a busy person. I got people to see, places to go, kids to take care of, tasks to complete. Besides, David, all of those you gave us are Old Testament examples. Fair enough. Let's move into the New Testament. Let's take a look at Jesus when he walked on this earth. Did he have a significant task in front of him? 3 years to bring a message of a new way of relating to God and living life that would forever change the world. He certainly did not have time for petty interruptions, did he? If you study the Gospels, you will see Jesus' life is a litany of one disruption, interruption after another. He is preaching in a home. He is preaching in a home in Capernaum. When the ceiling opens up above him, interrupting his talk, and a paralyzed man is lowered on a mat to where Jesus is teaching. Jesus is headed from the city of Jericho to his next preaching engagement. When a blind beggar named Bartimaeus on the roadside is shouting at him so loudly that Jesus' handlers tell him to be quiet. But he just yells more loudly. And Jesus stops to heal him. He's at a dinner with influential religious leaders when a sinful woman arrives unannounced and wets his feet with tears. And he ignores all the big shots, just stop and love on this woman. His life is disrupted by people with all sorts of problems, physical and otherwise. It's just a continual procession of needy people crying, "Heal me, heal my child, cast the demon out." At a major outreach event, he is told, "We don't have enough food to feed everyone." Man, if I were doing a major event and you told me that, I'd probably tell you, "Don't bother me, tell Brianna, she's responsible for the food." Not Jesus. He comes up with the food to feed everyone. He is at a wedding and they come to him because they did not purchase enough wine. He turns the water into wine. Even as he hangs on the cross, he is not insulated from being interrupted because there's a man hanging on the cross next to him asking him for a favor. Jesus was faced with the most important task of all human history, and yet he was not so driven by the task that he would not allow the people the Father placed in his path every day to interrupt him. And we need to follow that same example. Now, don't misread me. I am not saying that we never need to set boundaries. There are times that I have to follow the adage of one of our elders that saying yes to one thing or person means saying no to another. Sometimes I have to prioritize. Your pastors, whether it's Pastor Blake, Pastor Mark, or myself, cannot be so focused on trying to meet every need in the church that we neglect our own families. Sometimes we need to cloister ourselves in sermon prep because that's part of our call. So there are times when we need to protect against being interrupted, okay? But more often than not, we need to have eyes to see that which seems at first glance to be a disruption to my meeting, my agenda, is actually God calling me to pay attention to his agenda. And no more season of the year is more in need of our understanding of this principle than the one we're in right now. When we rush about trying to fulfill all of our plans for Christmas, shopping, wrapping, decorating, parties to go to, people to please, and we often miss out on the reason we celebrate this season in the first place. Jesus came to this world, why? Mark 10:45 says this. Oh, sorry, that's still not working. Read it together. "For even the Son of Man not to be served, but to serve." One of those great serendipities of life, my wife's mother, who's in declining health, is now, we have her in the Sunrise assisted living right over by Fair Oaks Hospital. And so my wife was heading over there this past week to... She's over there just about every day to try to do some things. And while she was there, there was a group of kids, part of a church, that were over there singing to the elderly there. It was our Kids Serve Kids who happened to be there. What a great opportunity, parents, if you have children in those ages, to be a part of that ministry. our children who are taught to want and to need, and that they can have everything that they might want or need, and you know, taught that the mall is the greatest place in the world to go, to learn, no, Jesus came not to be served, but to serve. And that's what they were doing. The neat pictures of them hugging on the elderly, singing to the elderly. It was powerful. So, my friends, this season, your plans may be, your plans will be interrupted. Don't view it as a disruption, because God may be the one who caused that person who needed to be encouraged, who needed your help, to cross your path. You don't want to miss this because you think your plans for Christmas will play, how Christmas will play out, are too important to be interrupted. So when these opportunities arise between now and Christmas, just hit the pause button for a moment and ask God if He is in that encounter that is about to throw off your agenda. Because, friends, if your plans for the perfect Christmas have become so important to you that they cannot be disrupted by God, then Houston, we've got a problem. Because Christmas at its very heart is a story of interruptions. I did not get to hear the message at the tea yesterday. I hope we taped it so I can. But Katie, who spoke, did give me a brief preview of how we hear the Christmas story told year after year. And if we are not careful, it can become so familiar that we miss all the different miracles in it. We miss the work God is doing in the lives of the key participants. So I want to take a portion of the Christmas story and look at one character today as we go through this message to make this point. And I'm going to ask you, just so we don't get tired, everyone stand up for this, would you? And let's read this passage together. All right. This is how the birth of Jesus Christ came about. God bless you. God be seated. Thank you. Thank you. Fun for me to get to hear you guys. Okay, now, put yourself in Joseph's shoes. You are a well-respected man in this small town who derives much of your respectability because you are a person who has an unflinching commitment to following the laws of the Torah. That is what you are admired for. That is what has made you what we all want deep down to be, somebody. You're not rich, but you have a good job, the respect of your peers. And now Joseph is about to be married. I mean, his plans for the future are pretty well set, except that God is going to interrupt those plans with a pretty big interruption, I might add. Joseph is engaged to a young girl who he probably does not know all that well, as it likely was an arranged marriage in that culture. So these are not high school sweethearts who met in the ninth grade, okay? And Mary comes to him and tells him she is going to have a baby. Now Joseph knows he has not been intimate with Mary. So what is his natural conclusion? Someone else in this small town must be the father. And then Mary tries to tell him, oh no, I have not been unfaithful to you. an angel told me this miracle baby is from God. But if you are Joseph, you understand how babies are made. So you can be forgiven for being a bit skeptical of Mary's claim. And it being a small town, I expect that once word got out of Mary's condition, the gossip mill was running at full speed, as the people certainly were not buying into Mary's story. And the religious laws that Joseph was such a defender of were not very gentle when it came to how to handle this situation. So here is Joseph, who has for much of his life derived his self-esteem from how he obeyed the law, a law that is clear on what course he should pursue. Yet he also has this scared young girl who is to be his wife. What do you think he's hearing from his buddies? What do you think they're saying down at the local synagogue? Ah, get rid of her. Oh, how Joseph must have agonized over what to do next, because he was a kind person. But the law and the consensus of his buddies was pretty straightforward. So he makes a decision. He will try to thread the needle of faithfulness to the law and kindness to the scared young girl by divorcing her quietly. Because engagement back then was actually a legal process that you had to get divorced from. By doing that, he wouldn't subject her to the public ridicule, or at least the same level of it. So this was his way of staying true to the law, but not totally trashing Mary. Then in verse 20, it says, after he wrestled with all of this, the angel of the Lord appears to him and verifies the incredible story Mary had told him. Question: would it not have been easier for Joseph if the angel had come to him to explain it all before Mary did? Right? I mean, all the agony would have been avoided. All the wrestling. Yet God chooses for Joseph to have to go through the difficult process of wrestling through this situation before explaining it to him. Do you think that perhaps God wanted Joseph to first have to process through what was more important? Blind allegiance to the law or kindness and compassion to this young girl? See, friends, what we often see as a disruption is actually God moving in our worlds to teach us. And we need to just trust in that process. The angel says, don't be afraid. Well, what might Joseph have been afraid of? Of his reputation being trashed. Because his friends and his neighbors would never believe that God had chosen him and Mary to be the parents of his only son, of the Messiah who the people had been waiting on. So there's going to be a significant cost if Joseph follows through with his engagement to Mary. What does he do? The last part of the passage we read, when Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took Mary home as his wife. But he had no union with her until she gave birth to a son, and he gave him the name Jesus. He took Mary home as his wife. That was a public embracing of her as his wife. He named the baby to be born Jesus. In this act of giving the child a name, Joseph was publicly claiming this child as his own. Joseph has now stepped out in obedience to God and in a very public way committed himself to these two people who in the eyes of all his friends were tainted, stained people. Can you grasp the significance of Joseph's action here? He may never again experience the respect and admiration of his peers. You know, we actually see this later. After Jesus had begun his teaching ministry, Joseph, we assume, is no longer alive. It's in Mark 6. The people listening to Jesus ask the question, isn't that Mary's son? Well, in this culture, even after the father has died, you would always refer to a man as the son of his father. So to refer to him as Mary's and not Joseph's son was a way of heaping insult upon the father even after the man's died. So long after Joseph makes his fateful decision, his reputation still has not made a comeback. And yet over the 2,000 years since Joseph made that choice, countless millions have sacrificed so much to follow that baby named Jesus. But it all began with the sacrifice of a man named Joseph, who gave up his plans and agenda for this child and his mother. Do you think that Jesus was impacted by being raised in a family whose reputations were tainted? When you see Jesus show compassion and kindness to the woman caught in adultery, or the repentant tax collector, or the Samaritan outcast, do you ever think he thought back to his dad, who had given up so much to stand with Jesus' single pregnant mom when she was about to be ostracized by an entire village? And it would have been so much easier for Joseph to simply walk away from her. God disrupted Joseph's plans and his agenda big time, because he had a reason. And it was to teach us about what real grace and real love is. Friends, God often interrupts us. And it's because he does not want us to live safe within our walls of comfort and control. So let me ask all of you a personal question. How do you respond when God sends an interruption into your carefully laid plans and agenda? Friends, the very event we are preparing to celebrate came as a great interruption to the lives of many of the people who were directly impacted by it. Joseph, Mary, the wise men, they all pick up the phone and say yes to God's call. Others, like Herod, they screen the call man because he has no intention of allowing God to mess with his agenda. So how about you? I can lay out my plans for the holidays, the events the church will be engaged in, the messages I will give. I can get so focused on my family's plans, where we are eating on Christmas Eve, who is spending Christmas Day with us, how will that day play itself out. And if I'm not careful, I will end up insulating myself from the very reason that Jesus came that first Christmas, which was to allow God's kingdom, his way of doing things, become real in my life. So, is it possible that over the next 2 weeks, that what you might perceive as an interruption to what you think you need to accomplish on a given day is actually a gentle nudge of God to get you with his plan? And to notice someone who needs to be noticed, to encourage someone who needes to be encouraged, to serve someone who needs to be served, even though your initial thought is, I'm too busy for this. Could you today determine to make it a priority that each person that you interact with over these next 2 weeks, be it a waiter at a restaurant, a sales clerk at the mall, a homeless person on the side of the road, someone in your church family, someone in your own family, that you will not just treat them like an inconvenience to your busy schedule, but you will notice them and ask God to heighten your sense. Lord, does that person have a need that you want me to meet? Is that why you brought them here at this moment? Can we all pray today for God to take away our tunnel vision this Christmas and open us up to his interruptions, no matter how big or how small? Because if we do, then this Christmas we will truly partner with God. As the worship team comes forward, we will truly partner with God in bringing joy to this world. Let me pray as they come forward. Precious Lord Jesus, help us. We need it, Lord. We are so self-absorbed, so selfish. We get so caught up in our plans, our agenda, our needs, our wants. And Lord, every day you bring people into our paths for a purpose. Yet so often, we just don't notice. So Lord, this Christmas, can we truly as a church body see those interruptions that come along our way, see them as you coming in our lives, Lord, to teach us what it means to really live out the kingdom that came that first Christmas morn. In Jesus' name we pray. And let's raise the roof.